You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The A's are in full swing at spring training. Let's catch up with Jane Lee to get all the news and notes coming out of that camp. I am Allison Footer. Jane, I think I want to start with just talking about the obvious, Sonny Gray. How does he look? I don't know. We're going to be watching him a lot because he didn't have a good year last year, quite frankly. So how are things going for him in this early spring training?
Yeah, he made his debut yesterday, and Sonny looked like Sonny. I think he looked more like, you know, we're used to seeing him, the Sonny of 2015, more than the Sonny of 2016. And I know it's just one game, and it's going to be talked about every time he's out there, and then the cycle's going to begin again when the regular season starts. And it's definitely too early to say that Sonny's back, but, I mean, the fact that they got a glimpse of the guy that they're used to seeing performing the way he did, he was threw a ton of strikes, had four strikeouts over two innings, only gave up one hit, and it was the first batter of the game, and I think it really upset him because Sonny is such a fierce competitor, no matter the situation, be it, you know, exhibition game or not. And he was just locked in from there. He was saying it was kind of interesting after the game hearing him talk about, you know, missing his location just ever so slightly with that one batter, and then they threw the exact same pitch in the same sequence the next inning and got a strikeout out of it. And that's just kind of the type of guy Sonny is. I mean, he is so in tune with himself, with the game, and, you know, always has, you know, a plan going in, and for him to execute it that first time out, I think it was a little bit of a relief for him just because he hasn't been in a game situation in a long time, just dealing with so many injuries last year. And also a relief for the team just knowing, hey, like, this is our guy. He's looking like he should. This is the guy we're going to need to be counting on. And, of course, you know, it's easy to maybe overhype it over, you know, two innings. But I think it was still important to see just because it was his first time out. And even though it is spring training, and sometimes, you know, we talk about results too much, I think for him, he kind of needs those results this spring just to kind of get that confidence back going into the season.
Yeah, there's this odd thing about him not being able to participate in the World Baseball Classic because he was denied insurance coverage. Is that something that they can't anticipate ahead of time, and that just or did somebody miss something, a rule?
No, I guess they did not find out about it until well after he committed to the team, which you would think that, you know, you have a list of guys that, you know, you want to ask to participate. They would do this vetting process beforehand. You know, why wait until now to go through this and deny someone who was really looking forward to it? I mean, Sonny has played for the national team before, really enjoyed it. And I think he was kind of excited about knowing he was going to be able to compete in these high-intensity games before the regular season began. One day in the clubhouse, he was showing me, you know, the shoes he was having New Balance make for the World Baseball Classic exclusively, these red, white, and blue shoes. I think he was super excited. And then to find out, you know, that you can't play because of an issue like that, I think it was pretty unfortunate. Of course, there's a silver lining of, hey, he gets to stay with the A's and they get to keep watch over him all spring. But no, this, for some reason, it's not something that was brought to his attention until well after he committed. And it's not something, I mean, I had ever heard of. I know that I guess a few other players like Russell Martin had the same issue. And I guess, you know, being considered a player who is denied insurance, I mean, Sonny just couldn't meet any of their requirements. He spent way too many days on the DL last year. He was injured at the end of August. And even when he did come back, he didn't throw enough innings to kind of meet that exception. So kind of an unfortunate thing to happen. But also, I mean, there's definitely positives out of it, just knowing that he will be here and, you know, the A's can just kind of oversee him a little bit better.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so another odd little strange thing that's going on. Sergio Casilla, did he ever make it to camp?
He is not here. The A's have been here for 2.5 weeks now. And I know that there's, you know, you hear about these visa delays all the time, but this seems pretty excessive. And it's not like the A's even have a timetable of when they know he's going to be here. And we heard, you know, at the beginning of spring, there was going to be a delay because he didn't sign until the end of January. So it wasn't until then that this process could even begin. But you would think by now, I mean, we're into March, and Santiago is a guy that is supposed to go also join the Dominican Republic and play in the WBC. And now the A's are wondering, okay, are we even going to have him here before he's supposed to go play for them? I mean, Bob Melvin, you know, keeps saying every day, I haven't even met the guy. I just want to meet him. And, you know, it's not just like it's any guy either. I mean, this is a guy that's going to play a substantial role in their bullpen. But we ask, you know, continually every morning, you know, any word. And it's just the same answer, no, every day. It used to be any day now, and I think that they've given up on even saying that. So I think at the beginning of camp, there wasn't much of a concern just because, you know, he's a veteran. He knows how to prepare for the regular season. He's been doing all of his throwing in the Dominican Republic at the team's academy. So it's not like he's just sitting around. I mean, he's doing all of his work, but I mean, when you get here, you still, I'm sure the A's want to see him throw a bullpen, you know, face hitters in BP before throwing him into a game. And even though he has had a big workload in recent years, and even though he is a veteran who knows how to prepare, I mean, you still need to get every guy a minimum number of games before the regular season. And it just seems like the clock's ticking on him. And I know it's just frustrating for everyone involved. And, you know, we're also reminded it's not his fault. You know, it's not like he's choosing not to be here. He just hasn't been given the green light. So we keep waiting, and I know they're just holding out hope that he gets here before the WBC. And you have to wonder, at this point, does he bow out of it? You know, recognizing that maybe it's best he stay here with his new team. So just kind of a weird situation.
Yeah, that is very strange. That's a good point. Maybe he just should just stay put and be with the A's, so, but he's got to get there first. Okay, so I'm laughing because, so where would there be a baseball tie to the Oscar debacle that we saw the other night at the Academy Awards? Of course, we all know what happened. There was a little mix-up at the end, and immediately you're like, I know I'm going to have to write a story about this tomorrow, and why is that? Because John Axford plays for the A's. So explain to us why there would be that tie. He is the Oscars guy, and what did you ask him? What did he say?
Yeah, he is John Axford. I think everyone probably knows by now. He's a huge film buff, big Oscars guy, sees, more movies than, you know, probably – you know, definitely more than anyone in the clubhouse, probably anyone in the press box in any, you know, anywhere. I mean, he's the one seeing, you know, the short films, the documentaries, the animated films. I mean, he sees it all. And he also, of course, makes predictions, Oscar predictions. It started off a few years ago, and he started off, I think he only predicted 18. I think he left out the technical categories. And that year he went 18 for 18. So then he started doing all of the categories. There's 24. And I guess the last 2 years he's finished 17 for 24, which is still very good. And so this is, you know, of course known. So everyone kind of talks to him ahead of time about his Oscar pick. And then, you know, finding out what happened, coming in the next day, I think everyone's eye was just, you know, on his locker, like, where is he? We need to talk to him. You know, who cares what else is going on around a baseball clubhouse? We need to talk to this baseball player about the Oscars. And sure enough, you know, first sight of him, you know, we're all huddled around him asking him about it. And he went to a restaurant somewhere in Arizona. He didn't want to plug the restaurant, but he went by himself and was there for the entirety of the Oscars, which, I mean, the Oscars are long. They're like 3.5 hours. He shut this place down. There were no other customers in this place. And he's like, okay, the second they read Best Picture, I'm out the door. So, you know, they take the stage. Axford gets up out of his chair, puts his jacket on. It's just like any second, except, as you know, anyone who saw knows that the announcement took a little bit longer because there was so much confusion over the envelope. And, you know, Axford's there thinking, like, what is taking so long? Like, come on, just read the thing. So the second he hears La La Land, he leaves. He gets in his car, goes home. And, he doesn't turn on his TV when he gets home. He lays down on his couch and, you know, he looks at his phone, and his agent had, I think, texted him and told him what had happened. And he's like, what? This can't be true. There's no way. What is he talking about? So turns on his TV, sees what's happening, and then he's got all the electronics going. He said, you know, it seems he was watching TV. He had his tablet up, his phone. He was trying to find basically every possible video still he could find to get, you know, the different angles of the envelope and see how this happened. I mean, he was definitely invested in this. And he was also excited about it because he did like La La Land, but his favorite movie of the year was Moonlight, which did end up winning. So he was pretty ecstatic about it. It's just kind of fun, you know, talking to a baseball player about something other than baseball. And he's so passionate about it too. So yeah, that was definitely a fun morning. And I think, you know, as confused as he was over the whole thing, he was pretty happy about it.
Yeah, I can just imagine that he probably going to the ballpark knew that he was going to have to address this with the media.
Oh, for sure.
It's the greatest. Okay. So our last minute that we have here, I'm going to ask you to turn the conversation to you. So we're asking all of our reporters for a fond memory of covering baseball. So just kind of traveling around with the team. It can really be anything. Do you have a particular, you're still early in your career, but you've been on the beat for a while. So what are some of your fond memories from covering baseball?
I feel like I've answered some variation of this question at different points. And I mean, the first thing that always comes to mind is Dallas Braden's perfect game. I was a month into the job, so I had barely been on the beat. And, you know, you talk to writers and so many have not even experienced, you know, a no-hitter, let alone a perfect game. And here I am a month onto the job, and Dallas Braden throws a perfect game on Mother's Day with his grandmother, who essentially raised him in the stands. And you just can't draw, you know, a better story. And I just remember, you know, just the emotions of that day. And for it to happen to someone, you know, like Dallas, of course, just kind of, I think at the time, the last person probably on that pitching staff that you expected to do something like that. It was so cool. And, you know, just the, not only that day, but in the days that followed, I mean, so many great stories came out of it. You know, we got to learn more about his upbringing with his grandma. So that's definitely a day I will always remember. I mean, there's, of course, you know, you experience some fun things traveling around so much, but I think that's something that will kind of always stand out.
Yeah, totally. There are people who are 25 years older than you who have gone an entire career without covering or seeing a no-hitter or perfect game in person. So good for you. That was good. Very good, Jane. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of spring. We'll talk to you next week. The Rangers are in full swing of spring training. Let's catch up with T.R. Sullivan on what is going on with those Texas Rangers. I'm Allison Sutter. T.R., as I am talking to our reporters and doing podcast to podcast, the one overlying theme that everyone seems to have in common is that the expected starters, the expected starting pitchers for the regular season are really not doing a whole lot this first week of games, mainly because spring training is extra long this year because of the World Baseball Classic. Teams are still treating it as if it's a normal time. And so I guess that's not any different from the Rangers either, right? Because I know Cole Hamels is a little bit behind. Is that just the case with everybody?
Well, yeah. Cole Hamels is working in the backfield. He threw a simulated game the other day. He's not in any hurry. Yu Darvish wants to pitch today game, so he pitched in one game already, but then he went to the simulated game. The alarming news for the Rangers is Andrew Kasher has some soreness in his bicep, and he's going to have to be looked at. He wasn't pitching in A games either, but, you know, he's down a little bit, and that could be a big blow for the Rangers because he was their number four starter going into spring training.
That is a little bit alarming because, I mean, we've talked a lot throughout the offseason just kind of how they're constructing the starting staff. Didn't really seem like they had a lot of wiggle room for anything not to go right. I know that there's guys that they're sort of having their fingers crossed in terms of being able to produce that have question marks. I mean, do you feel like they can even overcome any kind of injuries to this rotation?
Well, they're going to have, you know, they still have A.J. Griffin, and he looked very good the other day. He could be a solid fourth or fifth starter for them, so that's the good news. They kind of like this kid, Michael Hochschild, that they got from the Astros in the Rule 5 draft. Yeah, Nick Martinez and Chichi Gonzalez, the two young pitchers, have been in the system for a long time. They've been in and out of the rotation. Maybe this will be the spring training where they blossom. That would be a huge boost for the Rangers.
Okay, so let's talk about a little injury news. Sam Dyson, sprained right wrist. How much should we be alarmed on this? Is this going to sideline him for a while?
No, I think that'll get cleared up here pretty quick. I still think he'll pitch in the World Baseball Classic. I think Cashner right now is the big news in camp because it's a bicep tendon, and that's not good. So I think Dyson would be ready to go for the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, no, that is definitely not good. Okay, and then Josh Hamilton. I mean, I'm not sure how much they were expecting from him, if anything. But already he's out for at least half the season with knee surgery. I don't know. When is it? Is it kind of nearing the time where we think that maybe Josh Hamilton is a former Major League Baseball player? It just doesn't seem like his body can hold up.
Yeah, it's not good, Allison. He came into camp feeling great. He had the reconstructive knee surgery. And he wasn't here a week or two when he already started feeling pain. And now he's going to have more cleanup surgery. You know, maybe this will work. Maybe it won't. I mean, you just can't count on anything right now with Josh. I mean, he's trying hard. He wants it bad, but it's just not happening right now for him, and it's not looking good.
I wanted to ask you about a story that appeared on the Rangers website written by our pal Joe Posmanski about Jake Diekman. You've written a lot about his issues, with his disease issues, not on-field issues, and just how much it can affect a person. Just a person who's just trying to live a normal life, let alone someone who's trying to play Major League Baseball at the highest level. He's just, and I like the way that he's been very outspoken about his ailments and just what he has to deal with just on an everyday basis. What kind of guy is he? He seems like he wants to be an inspiration for other people who are going through similar things.
Yeah, he's been very upbeat this spring. He's been in spring training. He's been in a good mood, very jovial. He's been at every workout. He's been out on the field. He kind of looks like a coach out there. Hanging out, but he's been with the Rangers all through spring training. He did the Facebook Live thing the other day about his situation. He's talked to anybody and everybody who wants to interview him about the situation. I mean, he's really pushing the message. He's, you know, seems to be enjoying spring training. Obviously, he'd rather be pitching right now, but I think he's making the best of the situation, and he's doing what, you know, great athletes do, is that they use their platform and their pulpit to spread the right message.
Yeah, good for him. Okay, so the last thing I'm going to ask you is, we're surveying all of our reporters. You have been covering baseball for an extremely long time, and so I'm sure you have many, many good memories. But is there some specific thing that you could tell us about the time that you've covered baseball, following the Rangers around, that's kind of stands out to you as a special memory?
Well, anytime you cover the World Series, it's special. I've covered a bunch of them. I've lost count. You know, I still remember my first one covering the 1989 earthquake in San Francisco. I'd gone to the University of San Francisco. I was very familiar with the area, and I remember sitting in the upper deck of Candlestick Park when the earth shook, and, you know, seeing the smoke across the bay from the freeway, and, you know, my partner Jim Reeves from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, he and I sitting there in the upper deck, and he was listening to the radio, and next thing he says was, the Bay Bridge has collapsed. And, you know, it was like the most stunning words I've ever heard in my life. I mean, I've been across the Bay Bridge 1,000 times. Fortunately, he was a little exaggerated, but just the whole earthquake in San Francisco was probably, you know, that was my first World Series, but that's probably my most vivid memory about, you know, going to the World Series and covering a major news event that was way beyond the World Series.
And you're from that area, right? So were you also, like, affected just from being from the Bay Area?
Well, I was out there covering the World Series, and the Fort Worth Star-Telegram had me do the lead news stories for 3 days. And
wow,
you know, and it was, I don't want to say exhilarating, but you're a reporter and you're covering a big news story for a major newspaper. I mean, that's what we all signed up for, and that's what I was doing. And it was a pretty incredible experience to do that, to, you know, write the page one story on the biggest story in America.
I didn't know that happened. I'm gonna have to look in the archives, see if I can find that. TR, thank you so much. Get back to it, and we'll talk to you next time. Thank you.
The Astros and Nationals opened a new, brand new spring training facility, but that does not change the fact that spring training is still very much spring training. Lots of news and notes going on, so let's talk to Brian McTaggart about all of the things going on with the Houston Astros. I am Allison Footer. Tags, a little bit of news coming out that Colin McHugh may be a little bit behind in getting ready for the season. So what can you tell us about that, and is this something that we should be concerned about?
Yeah, I think as of right now, it's something to watch. I think next week, if he's not pitching off the mound, then we probably should start getting concerned. He hasn't pitched off the mound yet. He's the only pitcher in camp that hasn't thrown off the mound yet because he says he feels a little bit of a dead arm. And now that's something that they normally feel maybe a little later in camp, but his arm just kind of felt sore. Just general soreness was the way it was described when camp started. So he's about a week behind the other pitchers. He is throwing. It's not like he's not throwing. He's just not throwing his bullpens or live BPs. So good news is camp is so long this year. We're still in February. We've been here 2 weeks, still in February, that they still have time where he can get his four or five starts. So I think next week will be a key that he can get off the mound at least once without any physical problems. And then I think they'll be able to slot him in to get his proper start. So no cause for alarm yet, but it's definitely something to watch as the next week or so progress.
Yeah, these are things that we need to keep our eye on. And just that Colin McHugh is the guy that he's not the one that we talk about like we talk about McCullers and Keiko being aces at the top of the rotation, but McHugh's a guy that you really can't take out of the rotation if this whole thing is going to work.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole question coming into camp was health of Keiko and McCullers, and you're like, oh, McHugh's steady. He'll be there. He'll make his 30 starts every year. And he still could, and maybe still will, but he's just been very steady and dependable the last 3 years, a guy you depend on. And yeah, if he runs into some troubles, then you know I think the Astros have some issues. They're already on the market for starting pitching. They have been all offseason and will be going into the season, but they need Colin McHugh to be healthy.
Let's talk about some position players. A.J. Hinch was talking about just working out the scheduling for Correa, Altuve, some of the star players. You know, we tend to look at spring training games, workouts, because it's the only thing that we have to go on right now. So we have the microscope, and every single little thing that happens is something that we talk about. But they need to. He's trying to pace those guys, and so we could probably see that through the exhibition series, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Altuve played in the regular season last year, I think he played 161 games. You know, Springer played 162. Correa was injured a little bit, but all those guys like to be on the field every day. And this is a long grind. This is a long spring training. They expect to make a deep run into October. They're going to have to work in more rest. And now that he's got this depth, he's added, you know, the three guys he added to the lineup. He's got Marwin Gonzalez now, who he can use everywhere. So that's going to afford him the opportunity to rest those guys more. They're not going to like it. They like to be in the lineup every day. But AJ knows this is going to go into October if they do what they think they're going to do. So those guys need to rest a little bit so they can be fresh in October, not just dead at the end of September.
So we're going to talk about McCullers and Keuchel constantly from now until the end of time, but definitely from now until the end of spring training. So let's just get it out of the way. Give us a little update on what's going on with them.
Well, things are going really good. You know, they have not gotten into games yet. Lance pitched a live bullpen on Monday, and he's scheduled to throw a simulated game coming up, I think, later this week. And then we could see him in games next week. And A.J. Hinch said the live bullpen went really well. He said Lance was throwing in the low 90s, looked really free and easy. So that's a great sign. Keuchel as well is throwing a live bullpen. We'll throw another one, I think a simulated game coming up as well. So they're both in target to get in games early in March. And again, they only need four or five starts. But it's all about health. And right now they both are throwing free and easy. They both look healthy. Everything you hear about any of the live BPs, you talk about anyone who faced them or the catcher, they said it looked good. So no setbacks whatsoever with those two guys, which is really the key to the whole season so far. We know McHugh's had a little bit of a setback, but they still need their 1-2 to be ready to answer the bell on opening day.
Let's talk about Ken Giles. There seems to be A.J. Hinch. It's been a running joke. You know, who's your closer? We asked him that, like, in, I don't know, December. We asked him at FanFest. And, you know, he understands that it's a question that needs to be asked, and he understands that we also know the answer, which is that there's maybe not a definitive answer. But he seems to be leaning toward giving Giles most of the ninth innings. Is that kind of how you feel about – is that the feel you're getting?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if they – you know, they clinch the playoffs in a safe situation, Giles is the guy on the mound. I think he kind of couches it a little bit because I think we could see Giles used in some different situations. Eighth inning, maybe bases loaded. If the matchup is right, we'll see Giles. So I think he's just not married to bringing him in that closing situation. If the game's on the line or seventh or eighth and the matchup warrants it, he's going to bring Giles. But he is the closer. He is going to end as long as he's healthy, he is going to end most of the games. But Gregerson's closed before. Harris got a taste of closing. So that helps him, gives us, you know, a level of comfort to be able to use Giles maybe every now and then in a different role earlier in the game that he can go to Gregerson or Harris in the ninth inning and feel good about it.
it's an interesting kind of progression that's going on right now, and something that I think that we should maybe pay attention to a little bit more, just because of the way that things seem to be evolving, in that managers are now, as we saw Terry Frank kind of doing in the playoffs last year, but lots of managers are, like you said, going to their best matchup in the best situation, which they can probably easily sell on the pitchers. But there's this other part of wanting to be the closer. There's still that mindset that the ninth inning is the most important inning, and if you're the most important reliever in the bullpen, then you get that inning. And there's also, like, arbitration, you know, and free agency, and these things matter, and the numbers matter. Saves right now still matter. Is that going away? It's kind of an interesting, I think that we're seeing an evolution where things might in 5 years be totally different in the way that they anoint a closer.
Yeah, I think so. And the good news for the Astros is Giles is under control for 4 more years. So I know his arbitration would come up. So, but we saw it already, the Betances case, where, you know, his numbers are terrific, really comparable to a lot of closers, but he doesn't have the saves. So people still take value in saves. And, you know, getting the last three outs in the ninth inning, there is something different about that, no matter what the situation is, that you come in the game and, you know, you or the game's not going to end, you're going to go extra innings. But you can't blame managers for if the seventh inning, if their hair is on fire and there's runners everywhere, they want their best pitcher, their hardest throwing guy on the mound. And it just makes sense. I think analytics will dictate that as well. But you're right, it will be interesting to see as we go along how saves probably get devalued when it comes to paying players, whether in arbitration or free agency. We're going to see things. Maybe there'll be a new stat on about high leverage situations. That's all we need is another new stat. But there will be some way we know to measure what they can do in the pressure of the situations they're brought in, other than just closing out games with saves.
Don't you think it's interesting, though? Because, like, basically the analytics teams have decided that the save does not matter. Let's just say that if you sit down with one of these guys and they, you know, they tend to roll their eyes and, like, put down the wall as soon as you want to talk about anything that happened before, like, 1995. Like, they're just not having it. So they are, like, over the save. But their bosses are still going in these arbitration hearings putting value on these saves to try to save a buck. I mean, I think this is fascinating. Am I looking too far into this?
No, you're right. You can say the same for wins. Right. Say the same for
the win
is gone. They look at other stats. And yeah, if you look at the way the game's evolving, the win isn't as important as it used to be. I think we're seeing that with the save. Offensively, batting average isn't what it used to be. They look at things like batting average of balls in play, and, you know, adjusted ERA is a thing they look at now. So analytics are changing the game in a lot of ways, and how we measure players, of course, is changing. It's going to take a while, I think, before we see it. But there's a lot of money at stake when it comes to closers, and saves right now are a big part of what they champion when they go to arbitration or free agency. But, you know, that looks like that could change down the road.
Give me a favorite memory, a baseball memory that you have while following the Astros and all of the years that you've been following the Astros, which is actually quite a long time. Give me something that stands out while you're following the team around.
Well, I think it was in 2005, the pennant clincher at Old Busch Stadium. You know, Pujols hit the home run to send us to St. Louis, and as soon as Pujols hit that home run, I immediately went to my computer and booked a flight to St. Louis because I knew everyone else was going to do the same thing. So I think he was circling the bases, and I already had a flight booked back to St. Louis. But of course, the Astros flew to St. Louis, and you know, Brad Ausmus got the pilot to say, if you look to the right, you'll see Pujols' ball still flying in the air, and, you know, it kind of loosened up the whole team. And of course, they go to St. Louis, and Oswald deals in Game 6, and they clinched the National League pennant, the final game in Old Busch Stadium before they tore it down. But, you know, a great moment for the Astros, and to see Bagwell and Biggio hug in the dugout when Jason Lane caught the final out. Just one of those memories that always stands out if you were there, and one of the greatest moments in Astros history.
If you think about, like, just how many hard-fought battles they had at Busch Stadium, the rivalry between the Cardinals and the Astros, the fact that they had their most devastating loss 1 year earlier at Busch Stadium in the 2004 NLCS. So that's what kind of struck me, is like watching the celebration going on in that visiting clubhouse at Busch Stadium, where so many things didn't go right over the years. That made it a little cooler.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, even hours later, we're in the press box and there are fans that refused to leave. They just didn't want to let go of the place. And it probably really stung that it was the Astros who kind of shut it down. Dan Wheeler, the wrecking ball, he was on the mound and got the final out. So he, like, signaled the wrecking ball to come and tear the place down. But yeah, A lot of rough times at Busch Stadium over the years. A lot of games played on that hot AstroTurf, but the last moment was the greatest one for the Astros.
Yes, that nickname that stuck with Dan Wheeler was Wrecking Ball, which was probably the coolest nickname that we've ever heard. Okay, thank you very much, Ryan.
There is optimism abound in every spring training site this time of year, including the Anaheim Angels. Let's talk to Richard Justice about what's going on there. I'm Allison Switter. Richard, sounds like everything is just humming along happily in Angels camp. Mike Socha has, given some interesting insight lately. One of the things that maybe someone that was considered an extra player in camp might get to the big leagues because of how long spring training is. It gives them a longer look, I guess. So Socha's going to be kind of looking out for that, huh?
Yeah, every team has extra players in camp because you have an extra week of spring training and a lot of exhibition games. The Cubs, I think, had 39 pitchers in camp. The Angels had 36 pitchers. And one of the things Mike Socha said is, I'm telling you right now, some of these guys are going to get looks they wouldn't get in a normal spring training, and there's going to be players, a few players, that are going to play in the big leagues because of the opportunity afforded them by the World Baseball Classic. And I thought that was a classic way a baseball guy would look at it. You know, like, well, we're all griping, hey, it's too long this year, there are too many games. The way a baseball guy looks at it is, there's extra opportunity in this. You know, we're not crazy about having an extra week, but somebody's going to take advantage of it and something good's going to come out of it.
Yeah, and on that note, it would also seem like because of the amount of players that are leaving the teams to go play for their respected World Baseball Classic teams, that's also there are actual games to be played back at the spring training sites and guys that need to fill those spots. So I guess that's another way that somebody might be able to win a job.
Yeah, it is, and it's interesting. You know, I was in with Seattle. Seattle's got 11 players, including their three cornerstone players, all headed to the WBC. But for instance, Manny Banuelos pitched yesterday. He's a guy, a non-roster guy. My associate's not even going to give the ball to his top three guys, Shoemaker, Skaggs, and Richards, until this weekend. So here's a chance. Here's a chance to open some eyes. And you know, make one more run at it for a guy like Ben Revere, probably extra at bats for him, even though he figures to be on the team. So it's cool the way guys look at it, and they look at it like, hey, I've been where these guys are, or a lot of us have been where these guys are, and instead of griping about it, we're going to take advantage of it.
So this is a great time to overreact, which is why I love talking about spring training baseball this time of year, because we don't have a lot to go on, right? So we don't have any regular season games to pontificate about. And we certainly, the only thing that we can judge anything on is by spring training, which is actually the worst way to judge how a player is doing. But it's the only thing we have to talk about. So let's overreact. CJ Cron hit a home run. Oh, my gosh. So that's just great for him, right?
But it is good for him. And it's good for him in that he ultimately is going to be competing for playing time with Luis Valbuena after Albert Pujols comes back. Now, we don't know when Albert's going to be back. Could be May 1, become June 1. But he, you know, a couple of months ago, he figured to be the guy. Like, he's going to DH first base, however they work that out. Now they go out and sign Valbuena. They give him enough money that he's going to play. So now it's problematic for Cron. So, it's not just the young guys feel like they've got to open somebody's eyes and get people out. Like Jesse Chavez, he's got to go out. He's been around long enough. He's not a kid anymore to win a spot in the rotation or the bullpen or wherever they're going to put him. He's got to go get results in spring training. And while they're often deceptive and, general managers say they build a roster in the offseason, they build a roster in spring training, and then they build it again during the season. So ultimately, you get the best guys up there. But it's important when you have an opportunity, you take advantage of it. And that's what I always liked about the late in spring training games where we're all going, okay, let's get this over with. For the baseball guys, for the scouts, the instructors and all, it's sometimes the best time of the game, because for a Mike Trout, for guys like that, it's just, hey, get your bats in, get your running in, then get out of here and let guys that are trying to prove themselves do it. And it's important.
Yeah, as I'm talking to different reporters from different teams, and there seems to be a general theme, and that nobody's really participating, pitching-wise, sometimes position player-wise. I mean, there's such limited playing time being given to anybody in these first few games. So most managers are like so-and-so and so-and-so, and you know, you name like seven guys that don't need to be seeing any spring training games in February. And the Angels are the same way. So with this elongated spring training, it sounds like the most teams are just actually treating it as if it's not longer, and they're almost disregarding these first few games because you can't really play them that much during spring training, right? I mean, but the position players get like 60 at-bats, maybe 60 plate appearances.
Yeah, and you
that's about it.
Yeah, and you ask each guy, what do you need? How many would you like to have before you're comfortable? You know, some guys will want 80. Some guys will want less than that. I mean, a guy like Pujols is a guy that, even though he's played forever, will want extra at-bats. You know, I'm sure Mike Trout could get 5 at-bats and then be ready to go. But and you know what happens is when a kid does something and then they meet a guy in June or July, what that kid did will stick in the mind of Charlie Nagy, the pitching coach, or Socha, or somebody else. Ultimately, it'll be the general manager, Billy Epler, will say, hey, here's who our guys have got. Hey, in the Orioles, Buck Showalter calls his AAA and AA manager all the time and just says, okay, what do you got for me today? Here's what I need. What do you do? And this is why a roster's not 40 guys. You know, a roster's not 25. It's 50 or 60. And you're going to probably need too many of those before the season's over. Dave Roberts spoke to the Dodgers the other day and says, hey, boys, we had 55 players last year. So don't think your time here is being wasted. You're not just fodder for to get us ready for the season. And that's true with all these teams.
Okay, the last question I'm going to ask you is completely off the field. So you've been covering baseball a long time, and we're surveying our colleagues about this fond memories that you have covering baseball, traveling around, following a team, anything that stands out in your illustrious career as something fond of covering baseball.
1986, Game 6 of the World Series. The ball went through Bill Buckner's legs. I was in Shea Stadium. I was working at the Washington Post. Tim Kirchen was working at the Baltimore Sun. We're sitting side by side in a small radio booth down the third base line at Shea Stadium. The way I remember it is we were alone in that booth. But anyway, the ball goes through Buckner's legs. And here comes out of the upper deck at Shea Stadium. Some fan had what felt like a 5-gallon cup of beer. And the beer comes out of the press box, I mean out of the upper deck, defying all laws of gravity, splashed on both of us. We're soaking wet. For the whole rest of the playoffs, our laptops smell like stale beer, and he looks at me, and I look at him, and he looks at me, and he says, honestly, I think you got more on you than I did.
So it didn't ruin any of the equipment that you had with you. It just kind of
no, people, but see, people talk about Bill Buckner. Every time I see the front frame of that, all I can think about is, duck, there's beer coming.
Hey, Richard, you win the prize for the most interesting story so far, so... Thank you. Thank you as always, and I'm sure we will catch up with you very soon.
This might come as a shock to you, but the Seattle Mariners made another trade. I'm being a little bit sarcastic, but let's talk about to Greg Johns about that. I'm Allison Footer. Greg, I say that facetiously because the Mariners are always making trades. Good for Jerry DePoto. So tell us about the latest right-handed pitcher that they have acquired.
Yeah, Chase DeJong. And Allison, it had been 21 days, so Jerry, I think I was getting the itchy trigger finger. You know, he likes the team he's got. They're pretty set. But this is a guy he says they've been pursuing since last July that really like this Chase DeJong. He was a Double-A Texas League Pitcher of the Year last year in the Dodgers organization. And Jerry really likes him, kind of guy that he likes to go after, a strike thrower, command guy. He's not going to knock you over with 100-mile-an-hour stuff. But as Jerry says, it's hard to trade for Clayton Kershaw. And these are the kind of guys you really build your team up with, the kind of depth, and they got a few of these guys now that they really like. He's going to start the season in AAA Tacoma. He's a 23-year-old with some nice upside, and they're kind of building a nice pool of pitchers waiting in the wings here, which is good to see. I mean, any organization needs that pitching depth, and they're kind of putting him in with the Andrew Moore and Max Posey and some other guys that they've picked up here to kind of, you know, be that next wave or guys that we may see sooner than later if they get the kind of injuries they had last year. So they really like the kid. Just been a very poised and mature kid, and seems like he's fitting right in. He was in the Dodgers camp, which is just down the road. So as he said, he got his car this morning and just went to a different camp, and here he is putting on a different uniform and excited to be here.
Yeah, so what do they have to, it sounds like he's got a big upside. Did they give up these guys that they gave up? Anybody that we should be concerned about that they might have given up too much?
Well, you know, every trade you give up. Drew Jackson, the shortstop out of Stanford, had a nice year for him two years ago, I guess, and fairly highly rated prospect, kid out of Stanford with good defender, and was playing, but he's playing A-ball last year. DeJong a little more developed, a little closer to being ready to go. So I think from that perspective, if you're looking for immediate results, I mean, DeJong's a guy that's going to be knocking on the door of being a major league pitcher, where Jackson's probably a little further off. And the other kid they gave up was a real young, hard-throwing reliever that in rookie ball. So that's most trades. So with prospects, you never know how they're going to come out. But I know they're very high on DeJong, and I think he's a guy that we'll probably see. I certainly see pitching in Tacoma, and if he pitches well, wouldn't be surprised to see him certainly by next year in Seattle at some point.
Okay, so moving to the Major League club, Gene Segura has been added, I guess, to the World Baseball Classic for the Dominican Republic. So how did that come about?
Yeah, just he's filling in for Hanley Ramirez. That news just came out, and Segura very excited about it, and the Mariners publicly supportive, but you know, they're looking at things. This is they've now got 12 guys going to the WBC, and a lot of them are the heart of this team. You know, Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, and Gene Segura going to the Dominican, and you got Felix going to Venezuela, and Edwin Diaz is going to Puerto Rico, and Yovani Gallardo going to Mexico. This is a couple of their starters, and really the middle infield, good chunk of their 2-3-4 lineup hitters. So they're going to be interesting for a week or two. How they fare in spring here, as DePoto says, great to give some of the other young guys step up here with a chance to get some exposure. But I would guess Scott Service, the manager, probably wondering, hey, what happened to my middle infield here of Cano and Segura that I wanted to work with? But that's part of the WBC. Every team's going through it. But just talked to Segura, and very, very excited to be going to play for his home country of the Dominican, and going with his good friend Robinson Cano. They'll be the middle infield with that defending champion Dominican team. So pretty good squad the Dominican's got lined up. And he's going to be a part of that, and we won't see him in camp here for the next 10 or 12 days. Once they're all leaving, I think this weekend, about Sunday is the last day they'll be playing, Saturday and Sunday, and then most of these guys take off for their various camps. So WBC, an interesting element to spring this year, and it's going to affect a lot of teams and what they were looking at here in camp for a while.
Yeah, it's interesting, because on the flip side of it, does that open up some opportunities just for some of these guys that probably aren't going to make the team, most likely aren't going to make the team, but for them to get more playing time? I mean, part of the problem with spring training is like, oh, they have 57 players in camp. I mean, how do you find enough innings for these pitchers? How do you find enough playing time for these position guys? It really is a chance for some of these players that maybe we haven't heard so much about, maybe just making an impression, and then when it comes time for a promotion, this could stick in the minds of the front office.
No doubt. And you know, a guy like DeJong that we were just talking about, I mean, he's going to be, you know, certainly getting some innings, some prime innings, those kind of pitchers that, yeah, you need arms to get through. I mean, guys are only throwing 2-3 innings at a time. So they're going to be using a lot of guys, and some that'll be here in camp later on, and some that they'll just bring over from the minor league side probably to fill in. But you look at middle infield we're just talking about, certainly Sean O'Malley and Taylor Motter are going to be playing a lot and getting a good look at those guys competing for, you know, roster spot and a utility role. And they're going to get a darn good look and see what they can do, as well as, you know, a lot of the arms and camp. So, yeah, that is, as DePoto says, that's the positive, and they're going to hang on to that. They love the fact that, as DePoto says, the world looks at us and says, we like your players. We're going to take 12 of them. And they also like the fact that some of these young kids here in camp will get a good shot to show what they can do.
So Joe Posnanski, our super-duper reporter who does these wonderful in-depth features, had a nice feature on Felix Hernandez recently. And I guess I kind of want to focus on, he was really struck by his intensity and the fact that he's bigger, he's stronger, but he's not like, he just kind of is, he used to like look kind of flamboyant in his different hair colors and stuff, and it just seems like he's settling down and seeming more intense, maybe a little bit more edgy when it comes to some of the umpiring.
What's behind this, and have you noticed that?
Well, it's interesting. When the season ended last year in the last game, Felix pitched at the end, and talking afterwards, he said, you know, I am motivated to come back and show that the king is still the king, you know, and he's taken that for seriously. He is, look, all business this year, and Felix is a fun-loving guy, and, you know, he's always going to have some fun, but he does seem to have a, you know, I don't know, I'd say a chip on his shoulder, but this is a guy that hasn't been criticized a lot in his career, and I think he's heard some people, definitely read some things that, hey, you know, is Felix on the way down? Is he done? Is, you know, are the innings caught up with him? And this is a guy with a lot of pride, and he's definitely out to prove that he is still the king, and that's that would be a very good thing for the Mariners. He is in camp, came pitching early, and part of that's the WBC. He needs to get ready for Venezuela, and, but a good part of that is, hey, I'm going to change some things this year, and one of those is getting out, throwing more early, being ready, and working on his fastball a lot more this year. They really want to see his velocity tick up a little bit so that it can counter that wicked changeup that he's got and make his other pitches play off it. They feel like he's got to get back to, you know, he's not going to be the old Felix throwing 98, but they need him to throw that more, to trust it more, and get hitters off some of his other off-speed stuff, and I think that was, you know, a little bit of the problem last year. So, and we're talking problems with Felix. It's not like he had a horrible year last year. It just wasn't the king. You know, he's hurt a little bit. His final numbers were down. His strikeouts were down. His walks were up. Those kind of things that they expect and need to change this year. So, yeah, a little edge, a little steel in Felix's eye, and it's good to see.
Yeah, I guess it's anybody can be humbled, and I guess when you have people kind of starting to doubt you, and you've never really dealt with any kind of failure before, then you can, you know, it's a little bit of a reality check, no matter with who it's happening to. Okay, so we're going to move on to a totally different topic, and I'm going to ask you about you. Favorite memory that you have had covering baseball? You've been covering baseball a very, very long time, and I use AJ Casavell, our young reporter for the Padres, as an example of someone who hasn't been covering the beat a long time, and he came up with a very nice memory. And of course, then talking to Richard Justice and Ken Gernick, and Richard Justice was like kind of humble brag. Oh, one of my favorite memories is game 6 of the 86 World Series when somebody like threw beer on him in excitement. So I really like that one. So tell me something, just something that you think of fondly when you think about covering baseball these years.
Yeah, I mean, I guess personally kind of the coolest thing that I can remember doing was going to Japan with the Mariners in 2012 when they kicked off the season with the A's over in Tokyo. And it was such a great experience to be with the team and get a chance to do some of the things. We were over there for a week off the baseball field, but had a chance. They were doing Dustin Ackley and Justin Smoke went out to a military base in Tokyo, and I got a chance to tag along with them. And they put us on a Black Hawk helicopter, and we toured over Tokyo, which is the coolest thing I've ever seen, and being on a Black Hawk. And the pilot started doing some dips and duels to try to get us a little excitement. It's pretty cool being in a Black Hawk over Tokyo and playing around with a pilot that wanted to show us what a Black Hawk helicopter can do, which was make your stomach drop a little bit here and there. So that was cool. And being in Japan at that time, it was right after the big earthquake and tsunami, and had a chance to go with Hisashi Iwakuma out to his hometown, which had been devastated by the tsunami. A little more serious note, and he took us out to a stadium that they were helping rebuild, and the kids out there were so happy to see Hisashi and their hero there in Japan, and they'd been through a lot of those kids, a lot of their parents and family members and everything else, but they were so happy just to see baseball and be playing baseball and getting a field rebuilt for them. You know, those are the kind of memories that stick for me. You know, I've seen a lot of games, a lot of things, but sometimes those human things, the fun and the hard things that are kind of what the sport is all about sometimes. It's just the people that play it and the people they affect.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's those things you look back, you're like, wow, I've done some pretty cool stuff in my career. Like, we don't ever take it for granted, but it is pretty neat, like, just everything that you're able to do just because of the you know, the profession that you're in. So very interesting. Greg, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Enjoy spring. We'll catch up with you soon.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.